two, three.
The standard canon for up-and-coming jazz pianists has traditionally included the likes of Art Tatum, Thelonious Monk, Bill Evans, and maybe some early Herbie Hancock. But Lafayette Gilchrist grew up in the Washington-Baltimore area listening to much more funk, hip-hop, and go-go than jazz. You can hear the influence of those modern beats in the compositions of Lafayette Gilchrist's new CD from Hyena Records. It's called Three. Lafayette Gilchrist and his trio came to play for us in NPR's Studio 4A. Lafayette, you just turned 40, is that right?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I understand you didn't start playing piano until college. Can you tell me that story?
Well, I was taking an English class, which happened to be in the fine arts building. And my first roommate and I, we were just walking around looking at stuff. And we happened to stumble into the recital hall where there was a 9-foot concert grand piano, Steinway. I decided to fool around on it a little bit. I sat down at it, and I remember the moment like it was yesterday because I remember the very first thing I hit on the keyboard, I liked the sound. I didn't know then, but now that I reflect upon it, I was already kind of assigning order to the sounds that I was making.
So since you started with moving things around and imagining how you wanted it to sound in your head, as opposed to starting at, you know, 8 years old, learning Fiorelise, do you think that is a blessing or a disability? I mean, is it sort of like going straight to painting cubism without ever learning line drawing?
I don't know, because I think at some point you have to try and learn as much as you can learn about your instrument. You know, I wouldn't recommend the way that I came to it, but I came to it the way I came to it. That's the way it happened. But I did eventually go back and learn the basic rudiments. But then that leads you to the masters in a way. You had to investigate people who've been down that road and went a lot further.
Like who?
Oh, man, like Thelonious Monk, Duke Ellington, Sun Ra, Art Tatum, Bud Powell. Not just the piano players, you know, I listened to the Coleman Hawkins and Lester Young, right on up to Dexter Gordon and Sonny Rollins and John Coltrane and John Gilmore, all these wonderful, wonderful people. I mean...
And had you heard that music before?
No, not really. Not really. I had heard more about it than actually hearing it. But my grandmother... she had records of like Fats Waller, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, you know, Billy Eckstine, Nat King Cole. And it's funny because I remember when I played, the first time I played for my grandmother, she said, sounds good, baby, but where's your left hand? You need to listen to Fats Waller. You don't have no left hand. You know, so she knew what the instrument was supposed to sound like, you know.
You live in Baltimore now, but you grew up here in the D.C. area.
Yeah.
We like to be pretty proud here in D.C. about go-go music because it's one of the few sort of original D.C. art forms. I understand did you know Chuck Brown growing up? Was he a neighbor?
Well, no, I didn't know him. He lived near my aunt, though, and sometimes we would hear the band rehearsing. You know, when I was a kid, we would go hear him in the parks. We would hear him in the Langley Park. And then I got old enough to go to the clubs, sort of.
Old enough to sneak into the clubs.
We were here at places like the Chapter 3, the Washington Coliseum, the Kaywood Theater. We'd hear Chuck Brown. It was so many great go-go bands around at that time. You had Trouble Funk, you had EU, you had Junkyard Band, you had Reds and the Boys. There's so many groups.
I had the honor of interviewing Chuck Brown in the last year, and I was asking him how he felt about musicians who sort of adapt and interpret go-go and use some of his licks. And he said the one thing he misses in a lot of the updates is horns, that he loves his horns.
Oh, yeah.
And you're playing with a trio right now, but you have an octet that's heavy on the horns.
Oh, yeah, that's really my group, the New Volcanoes. That's the sound that I've always been fond of, because when I used to go hear Chuck Brown, that was really the first exposure to jazz that I heard. I mean, he would play the Harlem Nocturne, and he would play Don't Mean a Thing, and he would play A-Train. And the way he played it sounded so natural to me that when I remember distinctly when I heard Harlem Nocturne, the original version, the first thing in my mind, I didn't say it, but in my mind, I thought, like, they're playing the rhythm wrong. Really, that was my first thought. So I didn't know anything about jazz other than what I got through Mr. Brown.
I want to play a little bit of Assume the Position from your 2004 CD. This is with the full complement of horns. Let's hear a little bit. So how have you pared this down for piano, bass, and drums?
Well, that particular tune works with or without the horns, really. It just means that I have to really get the line across.
Does it put pressure on you at the piano to really kind of fill up the sound?
Yeah, a little bit. Not pressure, just a little added duties, you know. There's no pressure.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it with the trio version. This is Assume the Position. assumed the position played by pianist Lafayette Gilchrist, backed by bass player Anthony Blue Jenkins and drummer Nate Reynolds here in Studio 4A. This new CD, 3, it's getting some attention. Are you hoping that the attention will let you play more with the octet, maybe bring the horn section on the road?
Absolutely. I would love an opportunity to do that. The economics of the business is the main problem. It's very hard to take an 8-piece band on the road. That's very difficult for even the big-name guys. I mean, I can't remember the last time I've heard Herbie Hancock have an 8-piece group out on the road. He's Herbie Hancock, you know.
Well, I hope we can hear you on the road with the full band one of these days. I look forward to that. And would like you to play us out with something. But before you do that, let me just say thanks to all of you for coming in. It's really been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
And what would you like to take us home with?
I'll take you home with some blues. This is called The Inquisitor's Request.
Pianist Lafayette Gilchrist and his trio playing The Inquisitor's Request at Studio 4A. You can hear more from the session at our website, npr.org. The recording engineer was Chris Nelson. This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Ned Wharton, with production help from David Rector, Christine Arrowsmith, Laura Krantz, and Dave Nogueras. Vicki O'Hara is the senior editor. The senior producer is Robert Molesky. It's also the last day for our intern, Andrew Clearfield. Thanks, Andrew. We'll miss you. Our technical director is Rob Byers, with audio engineer Greg Gavin. Key Molesky is our reference librarian. Our theme music was written by B.J. Lederman, with additional music from Steph Scageri and Greg Smith. Leanne Hansen returns next week. I'm Rebecca Roberts.